Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Mishpatim Chamishi, the fifth Aliyah in Parshas Mishpatim. Our Aliyah runs from Perek Chav Gimel, Vov to Yotes. It is 14 Sukkim long, and there are a number of different topics in our Aliyah, like most of Mishpatim. First, it starts off with the notion of justice and truth, and we hear a number of mitzvahs that are clustered around Beis Din. We're told that a judge is not allowed to pivot the judgment. Of a poor person in their judgment, meaning they don't turn it in their favor just because of their station in society. Truth overrides pity in this case. And similarly, midvar sheker tirchak, distance yourself from falsehood. V'nakiv tzadik al tarog, don't kill bring down a person who is really righteous. V'shoychad leisikach, don't take a bribe because a bribe will blind even the eyes of those who are wise or righteous. And we're told at the end of this, the ger lo silchatz, you should not oppress an immigrant, a person who is a convert, who's a newcomer, because atem yadatem es nefesh ager ki gerim hayesem eretz Mitzrayim, you yourselves were foreigners as well. Before going further, just a few observations. Number one is, isn't it obvious that we're not allowed accept falsehood, meaning that should be pretty clear, and certainly for judges. So that's the case. What is it that's being described here, and why is it that there's distance? Meaning, just say don't lie, don't accept lies. That's it. So the Rashbam explains that it's talking to a judge who may not be able to disqualify the witnesses because there's no contradictory evidence, but by intuition, you don't trust them. There's something that's off. You don't feel good about this. Says the Rashbam, in such a case, a judge should recuse themselves from that situation, because you don't want to have any grounds, whether it's technical grounds or intuitive grounds, where a person where you feel that there's falsehood as well. Similarly, isn't it obvious that a judge can't take a bribe? And the Torah has to say it, but isn't this like an obvious business? No. So the Rav Dessler has a essay in Michtam Eliyahu called Mabat HaEmes, The Perspective on Truth. And his observation is going to the Gemaras and Ksubas, which describe how far it goes when concerning about a bribe. You know, the Gemara goes on to describe how Rabbi Shmuel had a situation where he had a sharecropper, so his field was being managed by a particular person who would take a cut of the produce, and this person used to bring the fruit in that belonged to him on Mondays on particular days of the week, and then he brought it one day earlier because it was the day of the courts were open, and he had a court case, he had an issue with somebody else, and Rabbi Shmuel recused himself of the case because he felt that he was nagah, he had a conflict of interest, and he witnessed the court case, he listened to the court case with another judge taking it outside the window, and he found himself absorbed in trying to find lines of defense for his sharecropper. And the sharecropper wasn't giving him any money, he was just giving him his own fruit that he actually owned, and he was just bringing it one day earlier, but that was enough to pivot and to distort his perspective of the case. So Odessa goes on to explain that generally speaking, we choose ideas which help corroborate the lifestyle which we want to lead, whether it's conscious or subconsciously. Meaning to say that, and he goes into the notion that the more that science has discovered the complexity of the universe, micro and macro, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. And one can see the incredible wonders of God and the complexity of creation, or one can say, well, this is all happenstance and this all just mutated into being. And the decision that a person makes about that, whether a person is going to see more wonders of God or see less wonders of God, is ultimately comes down to a style of life, meaning what type of life do I want to lead, and therefore what decision will I make about that, which is a profound observation into the human psyche. Really, the Gemara talks about this when it comes to Avodah Zarah. Gemara says that in Sanhedrin that people only chose Avodah Zarah because it was matir lahem es ha'arayos, because it allowed them to live a more licentious, morally free life. And so therefore they ultimately chose Avodah Zarah because of the less strictures, and they could live the orgies and parties that they wanted to as well, which means that the decision making was about essentially a comfort in life, and then the intellectual system they chose was secondary to that as well, which is part of v'shoychad lo sikach. Be careful about the things that we want which are going to change the way we live. Why are the orphan and the widow mentioned again here? The convert. Why is it that we focus on this again? So Rav Hirsch explains that we mention this again because the treatment meted out to strangers is always the surest standard by which to measure the respect for human rights and the humanitarianism which prevails in any state. That meaning, how do you judge a state? Is how they treat those who are foreigners, how they treat those who are not necessarily part of the fraternity from the get-go. And therefore, the Torah goes on to point out, that's the remaining laws we're about to see, which is the rest of years, that's Shemitah, the rest of days, that's Shabbos, the festivals and seasons, again, rest, Noisar, which is leftover meat, and Basar v'Chalav, the remaining halachas in our Aliyah, and they all demonstrate the fact that we're not in control. We're not in charge. And therefore, reminder that we are not in charge, so don't, we're not the hosts over here, so don't act like a host when it comes to those who've come more recently as well. I mean, that's the next thing we hear about is, we hear about Shemitah and Shabbos, and in order to, you have to rest for 7 years, six years of work, 1 year of rest, 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. And then we go to the next section, which is, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'chol asher amarti el aleichem tishamer, you should keep all these mitzvahs, v'shem Elohim acherim lo yisazkiru lo yishama al pecha. The name of of foreign gods should not be mentioned by your mouth. What is that? What's the connection over here? Rav Zalman Sirotzkin, in his commentary on Znaim LaTorah, makes mention of an episode that occurred in his community. And he observed that one day, one Shabbos, there were a lot of people who came to shul. There was like the shul's really full. So he asked one of the regulars, why is the shul so full today? So he said, well, today is actually also a legal holiday. And all those who usually keep their stores open on Shabbos are no longer keeping their stores open on Shabbos, which is why the shul is full. So Rav Sirotzkin got up and it was Parshas Mishpatim, and he said, he gave the drasha, and he said the following. He said, your children are probably all asking you, why is it that you are going to shul today? And you're going to explain that there's a public holiday because the king said that today is a day we don't work. Which means to say that the reason why you're coming to shul is because you're mentioning the non-Jewish king who made a rule. He says, well, the Torah tells us and reminds us, Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Yishama Al Picha. It's not about talking about the other deities or kings or powers in the world, and that's the reason why you lead your life. You can't do that. It needs to be, I come to shul because the King of Kings commanded me that today I close my store. It is, what system are you subscribing to? What is the top of the totem pole that you're living with? And if it's going to be the public system outside, then Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Yishama Al Picha. The Torah is trying to avoid us living in a more diminished size. Of course, we respect the rules and the laws of the country, but that's not the top of the totem pole. The calling that we have is much higher, which is the God's name as well. Finally, we hear a section in this parish, in the last section of the Aliyah, is about the Shalosh Regalim, about the three festivals, and it describes them as agricultural cycles, and the mitzvahs that are associated with them, where the people of Israel need to come up to the base of Migdash, Shel Panei Adonai Hashem. And we're told then at the same time is also avoiding chametz and not leaving over the korban the noisar till the pekon pesach till the morning, and at the very end of the aliyah, lo sevashal gadi bechalevimoy. So just quick thing over here is what is ideologically, how does Yom Tov fit into this? We haven't encountered Yom Tov before now. How does Yom Tov fit into the system? So the Maharal points out that it should be obvious to anybody that the six-day, seven-day cycle of the week should be parallel to our life in this world, which is we have 6 days, which is essentially our lifetime, to spend time preparing, and then we eat what we prepared once we get to the day where we can't, the day we have to be, not just do. And that should be how our life works, which is why this lesson has to be taught to us every 7 days, is to remind us what our purpose and tafkid is in this world. How does Yom Tov fit into this? Well, Yom Tov is interesting because you can cook on Yom Tov, but you but there's certain things you can't do as well. So meaning I can prepare for Yom Tov on Yom Tov, but I can't necessarily prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos except for an Erev Tavshilin. And there's lots of other limitations as to what I can actually do. So I can do a little more on Yom Tov. What's that parallel to in the equation of life? So the Maharal says that's parallel to the Yomayos HaMashiach, the days of the Mashiach, where there'll be resurrection of the dead. And people will be able to have a chance just to do what they weren't able to do, but just for that day, right then at that time. They'll be able to utilize that period in Olam Hazeh. But Olam Haba is a place when we get to there, like Shabbos, there'll be no way. There's nothing we can do for it once we get there as well. Finally, the last mitzvah is Basar v'Chalav, and it's framed as Lo Sevashal Gadi B'Chalav Imoy, which is don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. Why is that such the example used? To just say don't eat meat and milk together. So Rav Hirsch points out is because you may think that this is really the same entity, meaning to say here if the mother's milk is in the mother produced the kid as well. So therefore the two are really the same. I might think it's different. The Torah says no. Even if they're the same, it's still an issue as well. Even if they're from the same source. With this, we conclude the fifth Aliyah in Parshas Mishpatim. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.